Yes, a weekly health and well-being show, and I have George Stoffard with me in the co-host chair, and in the other co-host chair this morning, returning to the show, regular, of course, Keith Littlewood. He's a functional medicine practitioner at Optimal Fitness. If you want to find out more about Keith, do check out his Facebook page, Balanced Body Mind Health from the Inside Out. You've also got a website as well, haven't you, Keith?
Yep, I'm based at Optimal Fitness, optimalfitness.ae, but if people want a bit more information, balancedbodymind.com, balanced with a D.
Indeed, and we'll be giving out more details, contact details for Keith just before 12 o'clock. Any questions for Keith this morning on posture, on diet, on the health of your gut? So let's go to the messages again, because I've got heaps to get through and I really want to do our best to get through all of them. Where do you want to start, George?
Really interesting one here that I'm also personally interested in. Manoj has asked about protein. Now, he's not eating lean beef, and he says, can eating egg whites compensate for eating lean beef to get the required proteins? Can we have 15 egg whites a day if I regularly work out with weights?
I think people are misled that they need to eat lots and lots of protein all the time. You need to have a certain amount, and there is a number, which I can't recall what it is at the moment, per kilo of body weight that you might need. But I think, are we talking about he's not eating meat at all?
Well, he says he's eating, it looks like he's eating 15 egg whites a day, but he's just asking, can egg whites compensate for eating lean beef?
For the protein.
I mean, it will have some proteins. There are a lot of other nutrients in beef that you would probably not be able to get, more B vitamins, for example, and other micronutrients, but it would go some way to negating some of the need. But I would always recommend having a good amount of animal protein within the diet. 15 a day, I mean, it's like anything. We can if we eat the same things over and over again, it can cause problems, especially we have a leaky gut. But I think, you know, if he's eating and he's working out and he's generating the need for extra calories, there's not going to be too many problems. But I would with something like that, I'd say, why don't you just get it from a mixture of nutrients rather than focusing on just one nutrient each day?
A lot of people that do lift weights are told by their personal trainers that they need to have, you know, X amount of protein in their diet, depending upon their existing body weight.
Sure.
Is it possible to eat too much protein?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And we can see lots of things like, you see a lot of bodybuilders and that are really quite constipated. A lot of people who go to the gym as well consume large amounts of whey shakes. Now, these protein shakes are very poor quality dairy. If you ask most people who consume protein shakes, they probably say they produce a lot of gas because it's not great quality. There's usually lots of bulking agent and other not so good foods in there. So I'd always rather have I actually make jelly for protein, animal jelly. I put in a bit of maple syrup or salt in, or
raspberry jelly,
some juice, and some jelly juices well. But it's like there's 80% protein in there, and plus it helps to lower inflammation, plus to provide a lot of the essential amino acids. In fact, all of the amino acids are devoid of tryptophan. I think we eat enough muscle meat, so if we're getting the average meal with a bit of muscle meat in and a bit of jelly here and there is quite good as well.
Green tea, Tom's asking, how good is green tea for you? It's a good question, because green tea is another beverage, of course, that's come through in the last few years where everyone's going, drink green tea and it'll reduce your risk of heart disease.
The compound in green tea is called epigolaticans, I think. I might have got it right. EPEGs, I think it's called. But it's shown to be a very powerful antioxidant, which is used in quite a few antioxidant compounds that you'll see probably in most health food stores. I mean, that with curcumin, which is derived from turmeric, vitamin E, vitamin C, are all of the big group of antioxidants that are used quite regularly. So, yeah, green tea, good.
Scoliosis, coming back to another area you might be able to help us with. Sarah has slight scoliosis in her lower back. She's just wondering if Pilates would be good for her. Is it a good thing?
Pilates is okay, and I think it has a certain amount of conditioning. But if you're looking at why the scoliosis is there, it might be structural, it might be functional. I think unless you have a one-on-one Pilates trainer, what you need to determine is, one, is the neck driving the scoliosis? Is it an actual leg length inequality, which is usually quite rare? Is it a smaller hemipelvis? Is it because some of the muscles are dysfunctional? Is it because you're using your right hand too much? People who have right-handedness patterns and are quite severe with that will generate a certain type of muscular imbalance. So if you can correct the pelvis and correct all the other unilateral kind of asymmetry, you can get rid of scoliosis to a degree, provided it's not structural or idiopathic, which tends to come in earlier years and be quite a severe scoliosis. But
what is scoliosis?
It's basically it's a lateral curvature of the spine, and you can get a rotoscoliosis as well, which is a slightly where it rotates through a what we call a transverse plane. But there's it can be dealt with and managed quite considerably with the right exercise and soft tissue plan. But find out what's driving it: neck, eyes, jaw, breathing pattern, one hand in its pattern. Problem with the ankle, lots of different things that can contribute to that, but it can be sorted to a degree.
You say interesting you say about the jaw, and people think, what could possibly my jaw have an effect on the rest of my body? But you know, you do things without even realizing it, so that tension in the jaw, the way that you bite, all of these things can contribute. You know, if you're getting headaches, things like that could be connected with that tension.
Yeah, I mean, temporomandibular joint dysfunction, TMJ, is an issue when we bite on one side where we have a malocclusion. The reason why I went and got braces a few years back was because I had quite a problem with one side of the jaw. Now, it's actually structural. Now, a lot of our parents' and grandparents' nutrition is driving dysfunction in the craniofacial bones. But if you have tightness on one side, think about all the muscles on one side of the jaw being tight. You might notice a clicking on one side of the jaw. But think about where the rest of that tightness is going into the neck, into the shoulder, into the lower back, can affect movement from something as small. But bear in mind that the jaw muscle is pound for pound the most powerful muscle in the body.
Wow.
So if we're going to get dysfunction in a certain area, it's there.
Mm.
The average person opens and closes their mouth 4,000 times a day.
And if you present a talk radio show, maybe a little
double
more.
That, I think.
You mentioned there about the effects there, just that example of your grandparents, great-grandparents, parents, the genetics, where we are in line to the history that we've come from, where we've come from. So how much, you know, George was mentioning earlier, his grandparents, they died in their sort of late 50s, 60s. I think a couple of them, it was connected to the heart and stroke, they smoked, I think.
Yep,
like definitely. And we were saying about diet and how generations have changed over the years. So how much are we absolutely locked into our genetic makeup when it comes to our health?
There's an impact certainly from genetics, and we can see, like we talked about, what are called genetic polymorphisms, which can mean that we are exposed via environmental issues. And I've used this term before on the show, I think, is that genes kind of prime the gun, but it's the environment that pulls the trigger. So we can control. A lot of people might say, oh, I can't do this, I've got this gene for this. You're kind of letting slip of your control of it and letting something else have an energy that drives that, rather than saying, no, I'm going to take control of this. This is me. I'm dealing with this right now, and let's see what I can do to ameliorate the effects of what's been going on. So you can take charge. When you're motivated to take charge of yourself, you can actually become quite a powerful tool. So.
Aliza here has sent us a message. She's had several infections, post-operative cellulitis, but no cause was found. When you say heart disease can be caused by infections, what can she do now?
I'm not too sure about that. I mean, presumably she's had some surgery to have some body fat removed of some kind. And how that's been done, I don't know. But when you do something invasive, and now she's probably been exposed to antibiotics, which will have lowered the immune system. So there might just be a constant recurrence of having a low immune system, low levels of beneficial bacteria in the gut, which are contributing to the health of the immune system. So I don't know, you would want to look at maybe some bloods here to see if there's anything more sinister going on, or if there's a gut problem.
Sure. I mean, it sounds as if she may be sort of slightly worried that there might be a connection between sort of, you know, cellulite and the health of the heart. I mean, is there any connection there?
I'm not too sure. I mean, cellulite is a term that's come around in the last 20 years or so that says an enlarged fat cell. So all cellulitis is basically extra adipose tissue that is swollen. So is there an impact? Well, we know that certain aspects of obesity can contribute to heart issues, but is there something that's driving that? Is it an environmental issue? Is it a diet issue? Is it a lack of exercise? There are lots of things here that I don't have the answer for this particular lady, but with a decent history, we might be able to find some triggering factors that might be useful.
Sure.
And again, I think general rule of thumb, and what we're learning today, is to focus on inflammation, this chronic inflammation. So wherever you are getting discomfort and pain, is it coming from an inflammation? And that's what you need to treat, along with those extraneous lifestyle factors. So it's not just treating one symptom.
Yeah, I mean, everything we've talked about today has been, you know, we've alluded to one system, but the body is interconnected. And you get kind of specialists who look at one thing and say, okay, let's look, the thyroid's really dysfunctional, but why is that thyroid dysfunctional? What's impacting on that? The gut, why is that problematic? Is it because of gluten? Well, that could be part of it, but it could be other things in there, fungus, parasites, bacteria, history of antibiotic use. There's... if you get a good history and someone's able to write down, some people, I send out my intake forms and there's probably 300 questions there. And if they're not prepared to sit and fill that in and come in, then that kind of dictates about how much you're willing to spend and look at that, because there is no simple answer. We don't get, somebody doesn't come to me and say, I got this because of this. Hmm. And there'll be lots of preceding factors that will influence lots of other body systems. And it can be a bit of a detective work. I'm you know, peeling back the layers of that onion, and it might take some time. And I never say to someone, okay, you know, we're going to have this done in a month, because that would be unprofessional of me, and it just doesn't work like that.
Yeah.